Hey everybody, welcome back to the Matt Report Season 8. This time, sitting down with Birgit Polly Hack. You might know her from Twitter. She's got an amazing Twitter handle. It's at BPH. She definitely scored a good one on that one. But you might know her from Gutenberg Times and her business Polly Systems, where she's really focused on helping nonprofits and other organizations with WordPress. This is a fascinating discussion. She is definitely somebody who is a strong proponent of Gutenberg and very verbal for her side of the argument online, and I really appreciate her points of view. So we're going to talk all about that in this episode. We're going to talk about her consulting business, how she sells WordPress to organizations like nonprofits. Is there money in nonprofits? What kinds of clients should you go after if you're thinking about the nonprofit space? And of course, we talk about the future of WordPress and maybe how it's changing just a little bit with page builders, with Gutenberg, and all of that good stuff. This episode was recorded early January, so it's been a little bit of time. Like I said before, been a little sick, hoping to get these episodes out. I got a couple more in the can here, but I really appreciate everybody who's listening. If you have a moment, 5-star review on iTunes would be amazing. Go ahead and leave a comment there, say how you love the show, or just retweet it through Twitter and help us grow the audience. Let's get right into the episode.
Yeah, I am a web developer since 1996, so I have seen a lot of technology come and go. Mostly go, but also come very good ones. I started my business as a freelancer in 2002. In 2008, we kind of became an agency with developers, additional developers, designers. We broadened a little bit the range. I'm in the space as a developer because there was not enough software at the beginning in 96 to do what I wanted to do. So I was really happy when I started learning programming. It wasn't PHP, it was ColdFusion. But then in 2010, we started migrating most of the legacy sites that we have over to WordPress. We still are maintaining a few ColdFusion sites on our own platform. But that's WordPress, I got into it because I was volunteering for a nonprofit that helped other nonprofits to set up web pages, and we were looking for a better content management system because the one that what they had was hideously outdated. And I looked at probably about 20 of them, and WordPress came out ahead, way ahead, just because of all the support in the community. And if you're a volunteer helping other people, you need to have a backup, and the backup is the community. If they can search a problem, it will not end up on your desk, or you as a supporter can Google it. And so I worked with about 40 nonprofits one summer and migrated all their content over to WordPress. And that was WordPress 2.9 when I started, when we rolled off was 3.1 or something like that. So it was very early in WordPress 2. Yeah, that was longer than 2 minutes.
That's okay. So the focus of the business and the consultancy right now anyway is still nonprofits, right? That's the core component of the business.
Yes, nonprofit, it's public government agencies, and it's also small business that have a very specific focus. So niche businesses or mostly content businesses, but also very specific business models that we help migrate over online and support their businesses that way.
We're going to start to talk about sort of how WordPress itself and the business of WordPress is sort of changing, but I'm a little bit interested to explore how maybe like the nonprofit world is experiencing, because I remember getting into the game of the agency space and, most nonprofits, of course, being very naive to the industry, most nonprofits that knocked on our door in the early days were micro nonprofits, like 2 or 3 people, where it was literally no money, no profits, no money, no revenue. But the world of nonprofits is quite profitable, as I learned over the years. How has that changed? Is it still a business model? Obviously, the answer is yes, from what I can tell, but still going strong economically, politically, everything is still pretty good in that world, I'd imagine.
Well, it's good in the larger community of the nonprofits, especially in technology market, because now with a lot of donations, a lot of fundraising being done online that definitely needs a different technology approach that you had before. It's also an up and down. The 2008 world recessions hit nonprofits very, very hard, and it a lot have not yet recovered from it. And it's interesting that there is a report out in terms of which kind of nonprofit actually hires consultants, and it seemed and it divided it up not only by size but also by technology adoption level. Yeah, like the ones that barely go by, the other ones are more mature or they're functioning, so to speak, and then the ones that are very organized, and then the ones that are kind of leading the pack, meaning starting out as a technology company and making the business model work only in technology and not doing anything offline. So in all four categories, there's always a percentage that actually hires consultants. And to find that, it really depends on the leadership of the nonprofit. So if the founder is technology averse, there's no money in it because the value is not there or perceived value is not there. And also the collaboration between the teams in the nonprofit on the technology side is still sometimes the old school. I'm in Naples, Florida, which is more an area where the boomers retire to. So that's a generation that grew up with paper, and it's still a very strong focus. That's why I kind of really go out and go to conferences. Yeah.
Before we segue away from the topic of nonprofit, I remember my early days of running an agency, and I think it's actually like when I first started this podcast, there was an agency that was sort of close to me that picked up on my podcast, and they wanted to talk to me about WordPress, and they were like, hey, we do sites for nonprofits, and we want to start dabbling in the WordPress space. So they were like, hey, could you mind coming over and talking to us about WordPress? And they were building something on like .NET at the time. And I was like, sure, no problem. I'll swing by. I got to their office and they had like, I mean, this is again, a decade ago, if maybe not, maybe a little bit more. They had like 50 people. It was like this beautiful office. I was like, wait a minute, there's money here. But it's a different tact, right? Just to give listeners a piece of advice, it's definitely a path you can go down, but you have to be prepared probably like legally, contractually, and probably some things like you said, there's a specific niche that nonprofits have to hire from, and you just have to kind of find that if you want to pursue this avenue. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah, that definitely, you got it correct. What works a little bit against how businesses work is that there are a lot of stakeholders in a nonprofit. So you not only need to talk with one person, you probably need to go before the board. You have three or four people that you talk to, sometimes have contrarian. So you need to manage that and facilitate that decision-making process and invest quite a bit of time in it. I run here a local, and I'm also involved in a national group. There is a group called Tech for Good, and there are face-to-face meetings with technologists, nonprofit leadership, nonprofit volunteers, and staff talking about the technology hurdles, technology problems. And I'm preparing, and I'm running those now for 6 years here locally. We have about 20, 25 people every meeting, but those are the meetings that are most beneficial for those that have no IT director. And I like to support the so-called accidental techie that way, because it kind of moves forward the technology approach and then gets into the board and then kind of can snowball a little bit there. Yeah, but it's a long process.
It's almost like a WordPress meetup, but for nonprofits, exactly. Right? People can kind of come and learn and absorb from other people who are doing greater things.
Yes, that's really absolutely, cool. Yeah.
So let's transition to the WordPress side of things. Like I mentioned, at the top, this is something, the season story arc is about the change of WordPress and again, the market itself and, of course, the software itself. You're a big proponent for Gutenberg. How has, over the years, or over the last couple of years, how has page builders changed, page builder plugins, Gutenberg aside, how has page builders changed the adoption or maybe even like price point of potential projects with nonprofits? What I'm getting at here is page builders making it more accessible to build your own website. The accidental IT person comes along and they can build their own WordPress site. They really don't know how to do this stuff the quote unquote right way. Page builders is a great entry point, but then they hack something together and they say, hey, can you help me fix this now? how has that played a role, if at all, in nonprofit, good, bad, or otherwise, page builders?
It had in the last, I would say, 3 or 4 years, quite an impact on not so much us losing business, but also kind of have a different conversation with the people, because they now have a different expectation what software needs to be able to do. But it also is, of course, a performance issue. So how I experience page builders is from a save the website from it more than that people really take on it. So some nonprofits that work with WordPress and come to me and want to learn kind of talk about, oh, you need to have a PhD to know WordPress, which is kind of really sad. And that's why I'm a...
But almost true.
absolutely true. Absolutely yeah, true. When yeah, I started yeah. out with that transition from the hideous content management system to WordPress in 2010, it was very easy. Yeah? And the content producers, when we did the transition workshops, we had the techies go away and the newsletter editors come, the presidents come, the communication people come, who said, wow, we can publish on the net so easily. And that's still true when they have the very basic website and they are not doing a whole lot of other things like membership or additional online donation payment systems, stores, these kind of things. When you get in that realm, and I think a lot of developers are out there that that put the page builder in there and create the site with the page builder, they're not developers thinking about through how the nonprofit actually needs it. And I think there is a lot of communication missing in between. I am a proponent of Gutenberg because of the experience that I had 8 years ago when I saw the lights go on from the people that come from a very complicated one to a very easy one. And this is, Gutenberg is the same transition. And when I did not so much on WordCamps, but I did a three talks, WordPress, Gutenberg for nonprofits, and showed them what is all possible. The room gets really, really quiet and everybody is very excited about Gutenberg. And that is something that I knew it would happen, but to see it is really, really interesting. And that's why I'm, when I saw Gutenberg being released as a plugin in 2017, I said, wow, that's the next era. And I need to learn everything and anything about it and who's involved in it. It's also something completely new developed that does not have to think about at the beginning about the legacy, and they kind of reimagining things quite nicely. That's why I kind of jumped on, okay, I need to curate all the different information that come out there. And of course,
And you've done this through the means of starting this this new website, or not new, but you started the website, GutenbergTimes.com is where you're collecting that. I want to get to that in a moment, but let's just take a step back and talk about the necessity for something like Gutenberg. And I've seen it in my world and folks who listen to the show probably heard me say this a million times already, but I'll say it again. Like when I'm mentoring new businesses in an accelerator program that I'm in, you have 15 or so people in this cohort. These are people starting mostly, for the most part, traditional businesses, restaurants, food trucks, clothing, right? You know, the stuff that you need a brick and mortar store, not like you and I who could be on a beach with a laptop somewhere. And they need to get their website up. They've never done this before. And I'll go in as, I always go in as the person who talks about doing the website stuff. And I talk about WordPress, of course, but like without fail, at the end of this 90-day accelerator, people are on Wix, they're on Squarespace, because they went to try WordPress, they heard what I had to say, and they were like, oh my God, I cannot do this, right? And as great as page builders are, we do need something at the from the core of WordPress that is just there, right? It's just there. It comes with WordPress, and that's the experience that people use for a good portion of WordPress users. And I think, well, and I'll let you actually kind of give your sort of future forecasting on this, but I think page builders are going to find their roles in the future of defining, I don't know, Beaver Builder might become the page builder for enterprise users, let's say, with options that only enterprise companies need or what have you. And Elementor is more, you know, I don't know, consumer focused, whatever that might be. And maybe you have some thoughts around that. But I think it's healthy to have this come in, because I see WordPress losing share to right in front of my face. Even though I'm telling people to use it, and they say, hey, that's great. No, thanks. I'm going to go over here. So yeah, I mean, with that, there's no real question there, but if you have any thoughts on page builders and the future of that.
Yeah, I had the same experience that people say, oh, I'd rather go Squarespace. I actually lost business that way, where another agency kind of said, okay, let's do this on Squarespace. It's easier to manage. The page builder business is going to be a really interesting transition. I'm pretty sure that there is a total niche component there, especially when you talk about hotels or when you talk about restaurants or artists, that they need the design, the layouts reimagined on what is actually possible. And then with Gutenberg, there will be a standard on how those layouts come to the website. It will not be, okay, I have a theme that has 15 other plugins that need to be updated and downloaded and installed. I just yesterday, I don't know if you saw the tweet, but I was totally amazed. I took a website, we took a website online where we reduced the amount of plugins from 36 to 14, just because going Gutenberg and going Genesis. Shout out to Genesis, yeah, this has been a stable in our agency, definitely. But
because you see from a lot of the noise that is thrown at Gutenberg and WordPress in general, is, you know, it's fine. You know, people are like, I will never use Gutenberg on my website, or you won't find me using this, or whatever it might be. That's great. But a lot of people are just missing the point, is when you're in, you know, your position, especially with a nonprofit, with 17 layers of people that are managing this site with the expectations, yeah, you don't just turn things on and off on the fly. It doesn't happen like that. It's not what your customer expects. And making the decision on plugins isn't as quick as people, you know, with their small personal sites might do. When you get into that layer of middle management and stakeholders and CEOs and board members, they're not going to want to hear you, well, we have to redesign the whole site next week. Pfft, it's not going to happen. And a lot of people are, you know, and I guess that's just a human problem at this point, right? With this communication and what gets thrown around, is people just are living different lives. They're not experiencing the same thing. And everybody has WordPress in a different way.
Yeah.
I just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And of course, I listening to the community voices around Gutenberg, it's a lot of noise, as you say it, but it's also part of the adoption curve. Yeah, when innovation is adopted by a community, by users, the first ones that come in are the innovators. Those are the beta testers. Those are then the early adopters come, and that's where we are right now, is that the early adopters and the innovators use Gutenberg and push the boundaries, and all the evangelists. in numbers, the first two, the so it's innovators, early adopters, then early majority, then the late majority, and then the laggards. And it's a kind of a bell curve, and the from left to right, and it's pretty much the first two, innovators and early adopters, are in that cycle only 15% of the user base. So, we saw this with the iPhone, we saw this with some other technology that I can't recall right now, but that's kind of what comes. What I didn't expect or didn't think about, of course I should have expected it, and anybody else should have too, and that comes back to the, okay, could we change the communication a little bit? But the other 85%, they're still talking about it. Yeah, it's not that they are not. Yeah, the iPhone came out and nobody really talked about it because nobody put their hands on it and nobody said, okay, I need to make a decision for myself. Yeah, it was the tech journalists talking about it and it was the early adopters talking about it. But going mainstream, that took another 3-4 years. And that's what Gutenberg will have too. But we now have the 85% kind of seeing what Gutenberg is and deciding not yet to jumping on for whatever reason. Yeah, but that's kind of the noise, and that's where you have a hard time. I think Jeff Chandler put out a tweet and said, Jeff Chandler from the WP Tavern said, you can probably win the lottery sooner than finding someone saying good things about Gutenberg, which is kind of course, tongue-in-cheek. But I think that's part of it, is that the early majority hasn't come in yet in adopting Gutenberg.
There's a couple threads,
sorry,
or a couple avenues I want to go down around that. That Jeff, sometimes he comes up with some good one-liners. But I recently did a review on the 2019 core theme that comes with WordPress, and I, much like a lot of people, I knew like when it was becoming a more refined plugin and it was getting pushed into core Gutenberg, that is, I was like, hey, I'm gonna wait before I weigh in on this, because that's the other thing. Again, another side note here is I saw software developers like freaking out about this, and I'm like, wait, you all develop software. You know that we're gonna have iterations here. Like, you started playing with it in like alpha version 1 and you were freaking out about it. Well, we still had plenty of time to go. That said though, I played with it in the 2019 theme and I still found myself struggling to drag blocks around and to grab things and move things around. I mean, obviously you didn't develop Gutenberg, so maybe you don't have a particular opinion on this, but
oh, I do.
You know, I'm you know, and I'm saying like, man, these are like some core things where this loud noise over here that people were yelling about, I think they were kind of right, and I can't even drag a block around. Very frustrating. And sort of that same, echoing that same feeling of, is this really ready for prime time? It's on by default. What are your thoughts?
For my personal opinion, it was a little late in core. But of course, I get it's not ready. It needs to be perfect for core. I think it's putting too much expectations on it. I have every new iteration of Gutenberg release of the plugin, I was holding Gutenberg times together and say, well, I guess I'm not publishing today because I first need to figure out why this is not working anymore. That used to work for the last 2 months. There were many, many of those occasions. But I also found that taking the most difficult thing into a new software, and if that is part of your business and part of your livelihood, classic editor is for you. We have of the 40 business sites that we maintain. And you know, I'm in contact with our users or customers. We have 4 on 5.0 or 5.02 and Gutenberg, and all the others have Classic Editor installed. just because there are multiple reasons not to go on Gutenberg yet, because there are plugins. And that's why I say it was late in the game to actually put it into core, because in my experience, the last 20 years, putting out websites and software, and I find that end users do not test. They want the right thing here, and then they jump in and then figure it out. The same with plugin developers. Yeah, a plugin developer, there are maybe 15 handfuls, or yeah, maybe a couple of dozens plugin developers that actually jumped on it very early to figure out how their plugin can be best with Gutenberg. Everybody else was in a holding position because it wasn't in core. Yeah, so they kind of needed to delay it. Of course, Gutenberg was also not yet finished, so to speak. It is when you have a new when you imagine new things and try to put it into, you need to release it to see what breaks. Otherwise, you are not coming. You cannot put the work in to have every possible things that can go wrong. You can get it 80% right. The other 20% need to wait. Yeah, it's kind of that part. And the plugin developers, how fast after the December 6th release, a lot of plugin developers came through, and many plugin developers or plugins are already compatible with Gutenberg. You are not running into a whole lot of problems. Where it's critical is custom post time stills, plugins that use custom post types, plugins that use the editor, the old editor kind of thing. So page builders, yeah, there's kind of a clunky situation there that I think the user will need to make a firm decision. Either I stay with that or I go Gutenberg. I think the hybrid version, I think Elementor has a good approach on it with the templates. But of course, yeah, we have the 30 plus sites or customers, we won't go live in the first quarter. It's all pushed into the second quarter, 2019. Some will say, okay, it's going to be end of 2019 because we need to have the training. Yeah, we need to look at our content. Can we reimagine how we build content? Right now we do evaluation on someone who has for 10 years put code into their editor. Yeah, we need to kind of look how that works. Yeah, and that takes time.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's, you know, I haven't heard anything crazy come across my Twitter sphere or anything like that, or even at Pagely, where folks have, you know, all of a sudden the site's broken and they can't recover. I haven't heard any crazy stories like that yet, but what I do see trickling down is that editing experience and that creating that content experience has been turbulent, I guess, for say the least, for some folks. The other half of the argument is the decision making. And I don't want to put you on the spot. God knows that I will say what I want to say. You don't have to. But it's the decision making that I think has riled up so many people. And yes, 2 years of a runway to get to this point. The things that really irked me and maybe a lot of others are a lot of the decisions possibly not being as open as we might have hoped for, and just lack of clarity, at least from my perspective, lack of clarity from leadership, namely Matt, on where this whole thing is going. I did a video about this, and I said, hey, I was really behind the WordPress movement of course, democratization of publishing. I'm behind that, but WordPress as the operating system of the internet. I really liked that tagline many years ago. And I think that was a big cause for concern. And now we see things like our, you know, friend of the show, Morten Rand Hendrickson, which I know you've had some conversations with on Twitter, sort of back and forth. Like, how do we get people involved in the decision making? Should decision making be even a thing that we're allowed to do at this higher level? What are your thoughts, if you want to share anything from that side of it, of how this all sort of rolled out?
I don't think there was a real strategy behind the communication, and you're totally right. I watched your comment and said there were some very good points there, and I think I tried to offset some of that with Gutenberg Times. You had to kind of get, but of course it was only those people that listen. And you can't, I think what the, if the last 8 years, I personally have not thought a whole lot about decision-making process in the WordPress community. The last 5 years was a little bit different. When I'm a deputy on the community team, and I have very much appreciated the consensus-driven decision-making on that part, and I see through the core editor and through the GitHub. Of course, it's not mainstream communication, but it is when you go through the meetings there and the GitHub discussions on certain issues, there is quite a controversial and trying to come up with a better solution with nobody holding back. But that communication does not get into the mainstream. Nobody would be interested in that. I had Matthias Ventura, Tammy Lister, and Joanna Smoosen, the developer leads of Gutenberg, on a show in November. And I think the biggest hurdle was communication-wise to say we're just doing the editor. We are not changing the admin screen. And I think that is something that people at first didn't realize, that that would be so much stepping on other people's plugins and stepping on other people's information. And when every time a new version came out and something didn't work was, oh, we never will have that in the future. Yeah, it's kind of custom post times at the beginning didn't work. Yeah, but nobody listened to, well, it's going to work. We have, here's the issue. And can go and see how it goes, and we have a fourth wave. Yeah, so I see the communication totally. Yeah, there is not a team that that could have done better communication. But I also feel that it only comes up because there is a controversial decision there. Yeah, and there is something that is so close to your own livelihood that you all of a sudden feel forced upon something that you don't have a choice. For our business or for our team, we consider WordPress releases like the weather. Yeah, it's come.
That's saying something living in Florida.
Right, right. Well, we at least see the hurricane coming a week ahead of time. Yeah, but yeah, so we listen to the forecast, we believe it, but we have the umbrella with us for any chance of rain. And the release on December 6th really made it clear. And I have talked with Jan Dymbowski and with Marius from the support team. They have not seen any Gutenberg-related issues that kind of bubble up that weren't able to solve it. They had some other issues with the release, and I will find out next week on our Gutenberg Times Live Q&A. But it is 18 million downloads of a 5.0 version, or 5.0 version, with 2 to 3 million classic editor. That's a statement. Yeah. Communication can always be better. Yeah, and especially when change comes, yeah, you need to communicate 10 times more than usual. And I feel that actually everybody kind of retreated to their own ideas, yeah, and not come out and talk about what you're doing here, what you're doing there. Yeah,
yeah. I think that there should be because I feel like this is being treated as, you know, almost like a, it's like a product. It's a product within a product. Gutenberg, that is, a product within a product. It's almost like a startup in a startup kind of feel, where, you know, innovation, like you mentioned, new features, new ideas, and of course, sort of all coalescing around the WordCamp US that just happened. I feel like there should be like a product person that's like just talks in more non-developer speak so that more people can just, you know, wrap their heads around like the future and the features and the benefits. I think it's amazing that, you know, some of the stuff that's demonstrated with Gutenberg, it's, you know, it blows my mind. I'm not a developer, so it's like, hey, that's great. You know, but it doesn't really get me going,
right,
and it almost frightens me a little bit because I'm like, what are you saying? JavaScript what?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. But that's also the exciting part, yeah. I read in one of the developer blog posts, so oh yeah, and there were some developers that needed to do WordPress, and that's the bane of a developer existence, so to speak. Yeah, because it has so much legacy on it, yeah, and having a and that's part of the excitement for me, is that it also brings in new blood on how to do web pages and how to do web applications. And yes, there is a disruption, but okay, yeah, there are things that you can do workarounds, and I'm sure enterprise level is not jumping on Gutenberg yet. Yeah,
and I'm curious of how the undercurrent of all of this sort of shapes people's choices of technology. So, for instance, I know now because of Gutenberg, and whether or not people actually gave it a fair shake, you know, before it launched live. A lot of developers trying new things, Laravel, for instance, just to throw one out there, and people just looking at new sort of lightweight CMSs and saying, okay, I think for, you know, this particular kind of website that I might be building, WordPress might not be it anymore. And it feels kind of bad to say that because you've been invested in WordPress for over a decade at this point. And a lot of people are afraid to break that and say, oh, I'm kind of cheating on WordPress. I'm using something else for this stuff. But maybe that's where we need to be right now. Like, we need to disrupt ourselves a little bit, explore other pieces of technology, and maybe that actually comes back into the community at a later date. A couple years down the road, you've been, you know, playing with another CMS, another framework, and it just doesn't get to where you need it to be, but you've now absorbed some of that knowledge and bring it back into WordPress. Who knows? Maybe something good comes of it.
Yeah, and I have seen technology come and go. Yeah, so I think if you have seen how other open source as well as proprietary systems behave and how they come and go, I think it really is helping. And what we do with our agency work is looking at the business model for our clients and seeing, okay, what is it that you want to do, and is there something out there that can do it better than WordPress? Yeah, I'm very just not getting off topic, but I'm very excited about big commerce coming into the WordPress space and having kind of an offset, the WooCommerce, Shopify kind of discussion. So there are new things coming in, and the broader the developer range is, the better for the community. Yeah, all of a sudden WordPress could be the cool kids again. Yeah, so
right.
And
I'll tell you, I used to be a Drupal guy. That's where I came from. That's the world I came. I dabbled in, well, I didn't dabble. I ran an agency for an ISP when they were doing Drupal, going from Drupal 4 to Drupal 5, and then we left to WordPress to go into WordPress at Drupal 6. But I see some of these updates that Dries, the lead of Drupal and Acquia, come out with, and I'm like, come on, Matt Mullenweg, come out with some posts like this guy does, right? Take a chapter from his book. I like these updates. I like this vision that he's painting for us. Not what's in your bag. I don't care what's in your travel bag, Matt.
Yeah,
okay, I'm off, Matt. I won't put you on the spot.
Right. No, I don't have some. I actually admire Matt tremendously because, as a 19-year-old and now 34-year-old, having built this company, it's really a tremendous work, and it's a very unique thing. I have learned in my career before developer that there are certain things that you do in a one-on-one conversation and certain things you do in a public space. And I think that is my upbringing. So when I talk with Yeah, when I have these experiences that Gutenberg kind of just makes my life miserable, then I don't take it to Twitter. I take it to the co-editor chat. I put it up on GitHub and let the chips fall where they may, because there are people behind it. Yeah, and they are. I know how I get defensive and how I get a little bit off put when someone criticizes me publicly, unwarranted. And I think when you look at Matt doing town hall meetings at the Q&A at WordPress, he has a good head on his on to know it's a valid question. I need to answer it, and I'm not running away from the question. And that is admirable. And I have whatever you take with the answer, and you have to deal with your own feelings about that. I ran a company with 40, 50 people, 1,200 guests every day. I was a restaurant manager before. Emotions fly, and you need to organize it, and then you kind of ran with it. But you need to feed the people, no matter what happens. Yeah, you need to go out absolutely. And feed them.
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, and I've said this before, like, the leadership has to make decisions. Leadership also has to be willing to bear the brunt of those decisions. I told Matt that I admire him and I don't at the same time, because I wouldn't want to deal with it either. And I think a lot of the people who criticize Matt wouldn't want to be in his position, I guess myself included, right? I wouldn't want to be, the lead of this stuff, but I'll be a critic.
And you mentioned this in one of your podcasts as well, just criticizing Matt actually diminishes what the army of core contributors has been doing day over day, year over year, to push this forward. Yeah, there are in the core committer channel and the core channel with the meetings. Yeah, there are a lot of brilliant people leading this. And I'm glad that Matt can take the noise of it away from them, so they can focus on what they're doing, what they're doing well, and let them be brilliant without getting distracted from all the different opinions. I have found in my life, and I do a lot of community organizing, is when you have more opinions, it doesn't mean that your decisions get better. You have to deal just with all the opinions. And I think that's the hardest part of it, is whose input you listen to, you evaluate, and then you move forward from it. Yeah. And being listened to doesn't, being heard is one thing, being listened to is another thing, and decision making process. Sometimes you just can't win with a decision. You just need to go with what you think is the best for the community. And I admire that decision making process very much. I think there's a lot more the governance project that comes out. When Morten is there, I think it's really hard to find something new that does not derail what it's there, if you don't do the focus right. Yeah. So if it's making the community visible towards the lawmakers and have a voice in privacy and have a voice in accessibility and kind of making the world, the web better for 30% and having a voice there, absolutely. Internally, I don't know if there is a really, just because this one year is so controversial, that there is a need for changing the decision-making process. Yeah, is there really? Because the people that show up now, because it's controversial, won't show up later when the dust has settled.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. People are just coming out to, kick tires or kick the dust around and cause controversy. It's not helping anybody. But speaking of being heard, every Friday over at Gutenberg Times, you're doing a live Q&A right? And you're bringing on panels of folks to not only get tips but get that insider information from the actual leads of the software. Tell us about that. How is that going? What's the future of it? What else do you have around Gutenberg Times that folks should be aware of?
So Gutenberg Times has, well, thank you for bringing that up. We have, it's every other Friday.
Every other Friday.
I can't do every Friday unless I get a lot more sponsor on it to offset some of the time that I need to spend in my agency.
You know, this podcasting thing, it's expensive.
Yeah, no kidding. And so we do a Zoom, and we started out with the secrets of Gutenberg, and I brought some publishers on that went gung ho on Gutenberg and doing great stuff, and an agency of Munich who did something, and then Raquel from had I think it was the second or third show. She has still gets a lot of traffic for her. A tutorial on how to do nested blocks. I found it really interesting to talk to her because she is developer for a blogging community for food bloggers, and how they handle that. In November, we started doing panels invite more people in there. I started out with the leader of Gutenberg, and then we have and next week we have Marius Jensen, support lead from WordPress.org, and Sherry Bigelow. She has been in the WordPress space for a long time, works for Automattic, but she's now starting the testing team, and they have a very strong focus on Gutenberg. And then we have the WordPress manager of SiteGround, who just published a blog post on how SiteGround updated 750,000 WordPress site automatically to WordPress 5.0 and install Classic Editor, and I really want to talk to him about that. You can also, once a week, the weekend edition is a list of links that I found remarkable, and I have the fire hose is an update on the website, but via email I send out between 5 and 7 links that I find from 1 week, and then announce our Gutenberg Live shows, and that's about it. The Twitter feed.
I'm just looking for the link for the email sign up.
Oh, that's should come out automatically, but it's actually pinned on our Twitter account profile.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So
twitter.com/GutenbergTimes.
Gutenberg
Times.
Yeah.
And you can go ahead and click that link to join the mailing list. I mean, I think it's great. I think that, again, I being somebody who's been podcasting for years, I hope more people create podcasts and outlets like this, because it's a whole nother voice and perspective. And I think that's the power of this community, at least, you know, from my end, somebody who's not a non-developer, you know, people that are either non-developers or developers can create these movements and curate the content that people are interested in. So kudos to you on doing this.
Yeah, it's a great experience. And I'm the reason I do this is because I get to meet so many brilliant people and learn from them every single day. So putting one on the show is shining a light on the leaders of the community that are not named Matt. Maybe that's the name of the podcast. I'm still looking for a name.
That's why I called mine the Matt Report. Yeah. Right? That's why I called mine the Matt
People
Report.
People, not Matt.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Oh, man. Well, this is fun. Yeah.
Well, Birgit, this has been an amazing conversation. I'm so glad we connected to have you on the show. Where can folks find you on the web to say thanks? And of course, twitter.com/GutenbergTimes and GutenbergTimes.com. Definitely check that out. But where can folks find you to say thanks?
Definitely Twitter. My personal handle is BPH, my initials as in Bravo Paul Hotel, and GutenbergTimes.com. My company website is polysystems.net, and I'm on Twitter for the last 10 years, so
Yeah, you scored a pretty good username there.
Yeah, that's the only street cred that I have with the cool kids. It's a three-digit username. My direct messages are open. Ping me anytime. I'll get back to you within a few hours, definitely. I'm always open to communication.
Awesome. Everyone else, it's Matreport.com, Matreport.com/subscribe to join the mailing list. It's the number one way to stay connected. We'll see you in the next episode.